From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Or Redwood City, California.
Hayward?
Near Richmond, Richmond District, kind of.
I'm from Concord.
Martinez.
Hercules.
I'm from Marina, California.
SF State, wherever that is.
Coming up, we'll continue our series from the diary of a new teacher as she fights for her ninth graders to pass her class.
This is the beginning of high school. It's not the end of it. And we have to work because there's too much at stake.
Then a high school student shares a lesson she learned from a difficult friendship.
I don't have to depend on her to tell me how pretty I am. Now it's up to me to decide.
And we find out what it's like to be the child of famous jazz musicians. For instance, you might literally get picked up by Louis Armstrong.
You know, Satchmo's mouth was big and he's laughing and everybody's laughing. And I think I was the only one there that wasn't really having a good time.
We're completing Rites of Passage today on Cross Currents. Today we continue our series of radio diaries from a teacher's first year in Oakland.
I am just having a really great time in the classroom. I'm enjoying what I do.
That's Diana Arbus. She's been tracking the ups and downs of teaching ninth graders at Oakland High School. In her first semester, she was guided by a mentor as she tackled some pretty big challenges. By December, she was exhausted and learned she'd better take care of herself if she's going to meet the demands of her classroom.
I'm really tired. But there's a lot of work to do, so work will get done. Some work anyway, I won't kill myself. That's what I've learned. I've learned to let go of things.
She also learned that she would have to command respect and attention from her class if she was ever going to get through her lessons. By April, she was finally feeling in control.
I wasn't even ready to start class. I look up, and students are quietly at their seat, waiting for class to start. It was beautiful. It was beautiful.
But Diana is not finished yet. She has until June to get her students to focus on their lessons and to beat the grim statistics. It turns out only 60% of students in the Oakland Unified School District graduate. And what happens in ninth grade could either set them on the path to success or not. Here's Diana.
It's Tuesday, April 9, 2:15, 2:30 p.m. So yesterday, I was drained emotionally. Too many ninth graders are getting D's or F's in the second semester of the school year, and a lot of them are my students. So I am angry because this is the beginning of high school. It's not the end of it. And we have done enough goofing around, and we have to work. We have to catch up because there's too much at stake. Why do some kids come into the classroom equipped to do school and other students just don't know? And it's not like the kids aren't smart, because they're actually really smart, incredibly shrewd, and just they know how life works. But that has nothing to do with knowing how to navigate school and just knowing school things. Like, you sit in the seat that's assigned to you. You don't get up and wander around the, you know, you don't wander around the room. And you don't shout back at the teacher when something upsets you. And I'll get papers with students' names at the top and nothing. Nothing else. I only see my students 59 minutes a day. It's really hard to give them the time that the more personalized attention that I think they need. It's Monday, April 15. I gave a test this morning, and just announced that they were not going to even try to take the test. Very cheerfully, they're saying this, and I'm just annoyed that they would announce this to the entire class, because that undermines me. But also, why wouldn't you just try? Just try. Throw words on the page, see what happens. That was learned, you know? And it's my job to teach a different habit But it's overwhelming for me. It's overwhelming. How do I even work with that? At the beginning of the year, we had a couple of really especially difficult students. They stopped coming to class. And I've lost one student especially. She would come in high. I could smell it. And she would come in ridiculously late. Class is 59 minutes long, and she would come in 30 minutes in. And I just, how could you even catch someone up when they come in that late? But over time, I just was consistently nice to her, and always I learned to take this approach that when students, even if students came in late, I would say, hey, you're late, but I'm really glad that you're here, like, welcome. And she really, over time, she kind of responded to that, and then she was making up work. She was sitting in front of the room. She would participate, and she would boldly make mistakes, which I loved seeing that. And then she just disappeared. And I happened to mention to my CT during our daily debriefing, it's such a shame that the student hasn't come back to class. What happened? So my CT pulled up that student's information on the online gradebook and let me know that she's in juvie, or juvenile detention. It's Wednesday, May 8th. 2:30 p.m. I don't know, today I went in ready to discuss scene 2 and scene 3. So I taught whatever my CT had planned. And it seemed like all the other ninth grade student teachers were teaching Romeo and Juliet. It was so hard. It was just so hard because we started with a prologue, and it's poetry. It's a sonnet. It's a sonnet. Kids were shouting, you know, I hate this book. Why are we reading it in this old English? But when what I've noticed is students act out or check out, and they get really angry when they don't get the material. They're frustrated. And there are only maybe a handful of them, but they are so visible to me. And the other students, I felt really bad because I could see the other students, the majority of the class, look bored. And I gave out surveys from time to time, and they would say, we need to read faster. But there are these other students that are drowning, and they're just, I knew they weren't reading the entire time, and I was just trying to get to them. In first period is writing workshop, and they would respond to an assignment, like, describe the street that you live on. And I remember one student, they're all 14, 15, and he just read aloud the story of him standing at the bus stop and having a gun pulled on him and just running away from that. And he was just so normal about it. And I remember freaking out about that quietly in my mind. And then going to Mills and sitting in seminar where there's like birdsong and just pretty foliage everywhere, and just it didn't match at all. It was so confusing to me to just kind of hold those two different realities. And I know that that makes its way into the school too. It's Tuesday, May 14. Yesterday, we were taking a really difficult exam. And in the middle of the exam, they're stressing out about having enough time. And so an announcement came over the speakers about us all, the entire school, being on lockdown. So I have no idea what lockdown means. No explanation was really given. It was just really vague. I was crazy annoyed. I was just like, how long are we going to be locked in here? And is this going to disrupt the flow of the school day? Today, they said that a boy was held up at gunpoint by his classmates, and he was told to hand over his iPhone. They stole his iPhone. And this happened in the bathroom. And they never found the gun. They never found it. We just don't know. Maybe it's still at school. We don't know. And so I found this out at the end of, you know, around noon today. My grad school is, the graduation is this Saturday. So it's just, how can I go on lockdown and have sophomores hold up a classmate at gunpoint and then delve into the world of Romeo and Juliet and then have a graduation to celebrate? I don't know. Maybe this is the way my brain works. I'm trying so hard to make sense of everything and it doesn't make sense. Like, it just doesn't.
That's Diana Arbus. She's a new teacher at Oakland High School. Her diary was produced by Martina Castro. Tune in tomorrow to hear how Diana wraps up her first year.
I know I'm not yet a strong teacher. I'm just a teacher who, a student teacher who survived. gosh.
And let us know what you think of the series on our website. It's kalw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Ben Trefney. This week, we've been hearing about a first-time teacher as she gains confidence in the classroom. Well, battles with confidence often start much earlier in life, in adolescence. In this commentary, high school student Maya Litauer shares how a middle school friendship first challenged her self-esteem and then helped her find it.
My name is Maya Litauer, and I'm 16 years old. 2 years ago, in eighth grade, I became best friends with the girl who I would have done anything for. We prided ourselves on our ability to be completely honest with each other. We shared secrets we wouldn't dare tell anyone else. We were a constant jumble of words, of limbs, of clothes and phone calls and pictures, wandering in the streets barefoot because we could. She made me feel special, like we could do anything together. In reality, I was just her knockoff. I tried to look like her, tried to talk like her, tried to act like her. But I believed I loved her, so I agreed with things I knew were wrong, like how the girl whose dad died was a bitch for trying to be our friend, and how all the guys flirted with us because we knew everyone else was worthless. I was the one she could talk trash to, because she knew I would agree that the girls who called us stupid and bitchy were wrong. At the time, I didn't see the flaws in our friendship. I thought these things were normal, good even. I thought they cemented our love towards each other, when really, they prevented me from loving myself. In truth, our relationship was founded on jabbing at each other to make ourselves feel better. In truth, I feared that disagreeing with this girl would make me uncool or unpopular or worse than her. In truth, I constantly questioned my appearance, emotions, popularity, decisions, and actions. Then, on a school trip, one of our close, mutual friends said to me, "You do agree with her a lot. Whenever she says she likes something, you automatically agree." That's when I realized that maybe my opinions were not mine at all and my thoughts were not mine because she had them first. And maybe the reason she was the only one of us that people remembered was because we were all like her, all exclusive and judgmental and insecure and trying to be sexy just like she was. After a lot of fighting and drama and feeling unsafe and violated, we stopped being friends. I realized my self-confidence doesn't have to depend on that girl's opinions or criticisms. Just because she thought my stretch marks were ugly, wanted me to hate the way they grow on my skin, didn't mean I had to. It took me a while, but I learned that I can do better than hating the way I look and caring all the time what other people think of me. I haven't been in contact with this girl for almost 2 years now, and I'm much happier with myself. I don't have to constantly compare myself to her or question myself around her because I decided that I didn't have to. I don't have to depend on her to tell me how pretty I am, how much I'm trying to look good on any given day. Now, it's up to me to decide. And that's the way it should be.
Maya Litauer is a student at the Ruth Asawa School of the Arts in San Francisco. Her story was produced by Maya Ip. What life lessons did you learn in high school? Let us know on our Facebook page. We're KALW. And speaking of sharing life lessons, we're going to take just a minute to share with you the story of how one Bay Area journalist got her inspiration. This is from our series called My Favorite Teacher.
My name is Nanette Asimov. I'm the higher education reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle. And my favorite teacher was Stanley Asimov, my father. I would call my father my mentor. And he was a journalist. And for 40 years at Newsday, a newspaper on Long Island, and New York Newsday in New York. When I was in high school, and I never was on the school newspaper or had any idea of following my father's footsteps because you don't want to do what your father does, but I love talking to people. I love writing, all the components of journalism. And he said, you know what? Let's do a kitchen table school of journalism. I said, what's that? And he brought home copy from Newsday, where he worked, and he printouts, and he showed me what the stories were about and how to edit them on paper and what was working and what wasn't working. And so there in our kitchen, he taught me about this wonderful career that I have come to love over the last 30 years myself. So thank you, Stanley Asimov.
That's San Francisco Chronicle reporter Nanette Asimov. What teacher has most inspired you? We want to hear the story. Please share it with us at 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. And we might share the story of your favorite teacher on the air. This is Cross Currents. I'm Ben Trefney. The people we meet when we're young can have a disproportionate impact. People like our parents. Vocalist Kathleen Russell is the daughter of two famous jazz musicians, Lewis Russell and Carlene Rae. In this perspective on jazz, KALW contributor Reese Ehrlich recounts how Kathleen creates her own distinctive style of jazz, blues, and soul out of her swing jazz era roots.
Your mouth, baby. We could have a lot of fun, yes, a lot of fun, because you are the cutest one.
Some of Kathleen Russell's earliest memories are of visiting Louis Armstrong's house in Queens, New York. Her father, Louis Russell, and her mother, Carlene Rae, were both prominent jazz musicians in the 30s and 40s. She remembers what happened when Satchmo Armstrong picked her up as a child.
He wanted to pick me up, and I think my dad was filming, you know, this home movie. They were both, you know, home movie buffs. You know, Satchmo's mouth was big, and he's laughing, and everybody's laughing, and I think I was the only one there that wasn't really having a good time.
Russell grew up listening to all kinds of music, from classical to calypso. But given her parents' preferred musical genres, it should be no surprise that she has a natural affinity for the classic songs known collectively as the Great American Songbook.
I think I naturally like the way that music sounds. I like the way the recordings sound. I like the writing style from that period. I like the fact that people seemed to be having a lot of fun. You know, so every time I hear music from the 20s, 30s, 40s, it just makes me happy. I do my shows, a lot of people come up to me and say, oh, you know, I haven't heard that song since, you know, or my mother listened to that when I was growing up, you know, so I get a lot of that. So it's nice, you know, it kind of brings the audience together, as did dancing to music in those days.
Russell demonstrates her bluesy appreciation of the old standards in this rendition of Under the Spell of the Blues from her 2012 CD called Strictly Romancin'.
You're gone, I'm like a lost ship at sea.
Russell explains that Ella Fitzgerald had recorded this tune very early in her career when she was singing with the Chick Webb Orchestra.
This was one of her earliest hits with that orchestra. And then I just fell in love with the melancholy lyric against the swing feel of the tune. And so that was kind of fascinating to me, that she was really a teenager when she sang that, and it was really pre-Scat Ella. It was pre-the period where she really started recording American Songbook material.
Particularly like I'm Checkin' Out, in which Russell has a musical conversation with trombonist John Allred. She was inspired by an earlier version of the tune performed by Ivy Anderson.
Hello? Is this Harlem 77711? Hello, John. Is this you?
In the studio, really, I think that we came up with, hey, why not have a dialogue? And, you know, his name is John, and Ivy Anderson is talking about John. So it was just natural to and fun. So then we started, you know, a lot of these things we put into the shows, and then I see if they work, and I see if they're fun to play and fun to sing and everything, and then we decide to record them.
Kathleen Russell adds a contemporary and soulful interpretation to most any song. Her 2012 CD is Strictly Romancin'. I'm Reese Ehrlich with a perspective on jazz.
Oh, no, you're breaking up, baby.
Kathleen Russell performs June 22nd at Cuamba Jazz in Santa Cruz, June 23rd at Yoshi's in San Francisco, and June 26th at Los Gatos Jazz on the Plaza. Find details at KALW.org. And that's it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. Our team includes Julie Kane, Marco Choi, Audrey Dilling, Maya DePaula Haneke, Chris Hoff, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Christian Rose, Raisu Sussman, Alyssa Kapnick, Linda Ju, Megan Quintana, Laura Saponara, Leah Rose, Stephen Short, Ben Vu, and Melanie Young. Today's show is engineered by Seth Samuel. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Our managing editor is Martina Castro. Holly Kernan is our news director. And thanks to you, KALW is independent, listener-supported public radio. The mandolin you're hearing is being played by Michael Zisman, leader of the Americano Social Club. They describe their song selections as music for la dolce vita. What could be better than that? They have two shows this week. First, they're at the Blush Wine Bar in the Castro for the regular Thursday show from 7 to 10 p.m. Then the next night, Friday, they'll make music at the Revolution Cafe in the Mission, starting about 9:30. For Cross Currents, I'm Ben Treffney.